Today is Monday, September 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The United States prepares for the first of three presidential debates ahead of November's general election.
I like Trump. They like Biden. So what? One of them is going to win.
Plus, what happens if the world does not meet its sustainable development goals?
If we don't move on this, it's just disaster.
And you can still TikTok in the U.S. for now. We'll have these stories and more next. The first presidential debate featuring U.S. President Donald Trump and former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden takes place Tuesday in Cleveland, Ohio. This is the first of three debates where the two will appear face to face. Ohio is a crucial state for both of them to win, so the debate stakes are high. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti is in Cleveland for Tuesday night's debate.
This Trump flag was the first sign of politics in this Ohio neighborhood.
I debated whether to put it up or not because I was afraid my house might get shot at. And then I thought, you know what? I'm not living in fear.
But then, across the street, a Biden supporter, a friend of 44 years.
Whoever is going to be in charge just needs to lead us and be nice and smart and democratic.
Yeah, I hope the best man wins.
I didn't think that.
Oh, he will.
Ohio is a crucial state. No Republican has ever won the presidency without winning Ohio. President Trump won the state by 8 points in 2016. But this year, polls show only a few points separating him from Democratic challenger Joe Biden, as neighbors and sometimes families split their allegiance.
Half of my kids are Trump supporters, so we don't invite them over anymore, no. They can't come over until next year, so you know what I mean? So we say we aren't going to talk about politics, even though we do, and then we stop it.
Across the country, polarization of Trump and Biden supporters can deeply affect families. Case Western Reserve's Joe White teaches American politics and the presidency.
Republicans are more upset about the possibility of their child marrying a person of the same gender or who is transgender. Democrats are much more upset about the idea of their child marrying a Republican.
I'm going to get a wheel put riding with Biden, too. I think I'm going to decorate the whole front lawn.
No. How about hiding with Biden?
Dolores Gentile says her friendship with Patty Lucci rises above politics.
I like Trump. They like Biden. So what? One of them's going to win.
The first presidential debate Tuesday at Case Western Reserve University, not far from their houses, is expected to be contentious.
Vice President Biden will presumably be trying to walk a fine line of some sort. But he also wants to find ways to make Trump look as bad as possible, which may mean baiting him.
The debate venue in Cleveland awaits the two men to discuss their records, the Supreme Court, the coronavirus pandemic, election security, and the economy. Another topic, racial justice protests that have at times triggered rioting and looting.
That's why I'm voting for President Trump, because it seems like the Democratic Party has not condemned any of this.
I just think Trump says, I think he's mean. That's what I think upsets me. I think he says really mean things.
A new poll shows that 2 out of 3 Ohioans say that politics has strained their relationship with family and friends. They say they cope by avoiding any election talk. Instead, they'll leave the real debating up to the two candidates here at this pavilion on Tuesday. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Cleveland, Ohio.
Amy Coney Barrett's nomination to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court would represent the most dramatic ideological change on the Supreme Court in nearly 30 years. AP correspondent Julie Walker has more.
It would also cement conservative dominance of the court for years to come. Gloria Brown Marshall, professor of constitutional law at John Jay College, says based on Barrett's record and what she has stated, one thing is certain.
She is going to use the inroads made by Ruth Bader Ginsburg
to undo the inroads made for women.
New York Law School constitutional law professor Donnie Gewertzman says one of the open questions about Barrett is the extent to which she intends to follow stare decisis, which is the established prior decisions of the court.
Amy Coney Barrett's position specifically on Roe versus Wade is unclear. Certainly, as an appellate judge, she dissented in a number of cases that upheld abortion restrictions.
I'm Julie Walker.
On Sunday, the New York Times reported that President Trump paid little in income taxes in recent years, as heavy losses from his business enterprises offset hundreds of millions of dollars in income. Asked about the report at a press conference, Trump dismissed the claims and the Times.
It's fake news. It's totally fake news. Made up, fake. We went through the same stories. You could have asked me the same questions 4 years ago. I had to litigate this and talk about it. Totally fake news. No, actually, I paid tax. And you'll see that as soon as my tax returns. It's under audit. They've been under audit for a long time. The IRS does not treat me well. They treat me like the Tea Party, like they treated the Tea Party. They don't treat me well. They treat me very badly. You have people that in the IRS, they treat me very, very badly. But they're under audit. And when they're not, I would be proud to show. But that's just fake news. The New York Times tried it, the same thing. They want to create a little bit of a story, a little bit of... They're doing anything they can. Not only that's the least of it. I mean, the stories that I read are so fake. They're so phony.
The Times reported that Trump paid just $750 in federal income taxes in both 2016 and 2017 and paid no income taxes in 10 of the previous 15 years. Despite receiving $427.4 million through 2018 from his reality television program and other endorsement and licensing deals, Trump was able to minimize his tax bill by reporting heavy losses across his business empire. The Times reported that Trump claimed $47.4 million in losses in 2018, despite claiming income of at least $434.9 million in a financial disclosure last year. Alan Garten, a lawyer for the Trump Organization and a spokesperson for the Trump Organization, did not immediately respond to a request for comment from the Associated Press on that report. Garten told the Times that Trump did pay millions in taxes and that most, if not all, of the facts appear to be inaccurate in the article. Roughly half of Americans pay no federal income taxes, but the average income tax paid in 2017 was nearly $12,200, according to the IRS. The Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, continue to be a pressing concern for all 193 member states that signed onto them in 2015. There are 17 interlocking goals that are to be achieved by 2030. They span a wide range of topics, from gender equality to universal education, climate action, and an end to poverty. But their underlying premise is the same: a happier, more sustainable world for everyone. However, the world is not on track to achieve most of these goals on schedule. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Columbia University economist Jeffrey Sachs, the president of the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network and one of the principal formulators of the Sustainable Development Goals via Skype, about the SDGs and their importance today.
Well, definitely SDG 3, which is health for all, would be at the top of the list because we're in a pandemic. And we know that countries that have good public health systems have suppressed the pandemic. Countries in Asia, for example, I'm thinking of Korea or Taiwan or China or New Zealand.
How's Africa doing?
Fortunately, Africa has not yet had the worst of the world's experience. That's been in the Americas and Western Europe. In many parts of Africa, there's been pretty good control so far. So I would say to my African friends and African governments, keep at it, wear face masks, keep the physical distancing, keep track, test people, help people to safely quarantine or isolate.
You've been talking quite a bit recently about SDG number 4, quality education for all.
that is the most important of all the goals, actually, is to help build our children's futures. But it's especially urgent this year because the schools are closed, because education has been disrupted by the pandemic. So we need to find ways to have safe schooling for our kids and to make sure that all kids are getting proper education. This was Africa's principal crisis, probably even before COVID-19. Too many kids not able to learn up to their potential because poor countries in Africa have not been able to provide enough schoolrooms and teachers and facilities up through the upper secondary level, which should be free and available for all children. So I've been calling for years for more financial help for Africa, for example, from the European Union and others, so that we could say honestly and truly, every child in Africa is going to get an education at least through the upper secondary level, because that's what they need for their future.
What's next in your list of most urgent SDGs at this moment in time?
SDG 13, which is climate change, because if we don't move on this, it's just disaster. We have wasted decades. The big players that are causing the climate change are the United States, China, the countries in the Gulf that produce all the oil. This is where the big emissions are coming from that are changing the climate, and this has to change.
Closely related to that are SDGs 14 and 15, which essentially call for nations to protect the world's ecosystems.
We're killing animals everywhere. The number of big mammals in Africa, or the number of insects or amphibians or reptiles or other classes of animals is diminishing tremendously because we're chopping down the rainforest, we're polluting the habitat, we're changing the climate so that other animal species and plant species can't survive properly. So SDGs 14 and 15 say, in essence, for God's sake, take care of our planet and our biodiversity so that we don't destroy the very life support systems, our food chains, our crops, our forests, and the millions and millions of species with which we share the planet.
So that's your message to the movers and shakers at the UN General Assembly, huh?
It is my constant refrain.
You sound just a bit brokenhearted.
Well, I'm not brokenhearted, but I am a little bit peeved because governments should be there for their citizens and for the world. No country first. Everybody in this together is the truth of how the world works. And so this is what we need to do, and we need to keep up the fight to get that done.
Jeffrey Sachs is the president of the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network, and he was speaking to VOA's Adam Phillips. Still to come.
The Chinese-owned TikTok was to be barred at 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, but U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols, a nominee of President Donald Trump, said in a brief order he was issuing a preliminary injunction to prevent the TikTok App Store ban from taking effect.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Pi is an ancient mathematical constant that equals approximately 3.14, and it's considered to be the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. Astronomers led by researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology say they have discovered an exoplanet they nickname Pi Earth. It's a nearly Earth-sized rocky planet that travels about 81 kilometers per second to orbit its red dwarf star once every 3.14 days. Officially, the planet is known as K2-315b since it was initially discovered from data gathered by NASA's K2 mission of the Kepler spacecraft. The exoplanet was confirmed by observations made with ground-based telescopes in Chile and the Canary Islands. The astronomers writing in the Astronomical Journal say the planet orbits its sun so closely its surface is thought to be quite hot. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The global COVID-19 pandemic has affected more than 33 million people and claimed nearly a million lives. And while health officials are still urging caution until the development of a vaccine, a curfew imposed to curb the spread of the coronavirus has been lifted in the Australian city of Melbourne. The Victorian state government has said that a fall in the number of infections is allowing them to gradually relax other restrictions. Melbourne was placed into a second lockdown in July because of a spike in COVID-19 cases. And Phil Mercer has this update.
New cases of COVID-19 in Melbourne have fallen enough that officials are talking about reopening the city. In late July, authorities had reported more than 700 new daily infections. On Monday, they recorded just five cases. Infections have fallen sufficiently for Australia's second biggest city to move to the second of a four-step recovery plan. A nighttime curfew has ended, and all primary schools will reopen in 2 weeks' time, while about 130,000 people will be allowed back to work. The next step could be taken earlier than its scheduled date of October 26. To achieve a COVID normal status, Victoria would need to have recorded no new infections for 28 days. Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews says the state is so close to beating the coronavirus. He hopes other restrictions will soon be lifted.
This is a strategy that is designed to get us to a COVID normal Christmas. We are well on track. In fact, we are ahead of time when it comes to achieving that outcome. That is a credit to every single Victorian who is staying the course, working hard, making sacrifices.
Many personal freedoms remain restricted in Melbourne. Residents can only leave their homes for one of four reasons, including study, work and caregiving. A second wave of infections in Victoria is blamed on security failures in the hotel quarantine system for Australian travellers returning from overseas. A judicial inquiry has heard that travellers infected hotel staff, who then spread the disease into the community with devastating consequences. Victoria has had 75% of Australia's confirmed COVID-19 cases and most of its fatalities. New South Wales, the nation's most populous state, Sunday recorded no new infections for the first time since early June. Australia has had about 27,000 confirmed coronavirus cases since the pandemic began. More than 870 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The European Union and Britain are entering a crucial week of talks, hoping to salvage a rudimentary trade deal within weeks, despite a negotiating climate spiked with accusations of untrustworthiness. Monday's talks will center on Britain's recent threats to renege on parts of a withdrawal treaty it signed and which allowed it to officially leave the EU on January 31st. Trade negotiators take over as of Tuesday to see if a free trade deal will still be possible by the end of the year, when the current transition period runs out. EU leaders meeting in Brussels on Thursday and Friday are expected to authorize more negotiations before their next summit on October 15th and 16th. A few days after taking office, Mali's transitional president has appointed former Minister of Foreign Affairs Mokhtar Awan as the West African nation's prime minister. Sunday's appointment of a civilian prime minister was a major condition imposed by the West African Regional Economic Bloc, ECOWAS, on Mali to lift sanctions that were imposed after the August 18th coup. A veteran diplomat, Awan served as Mali's ambassador to the United Nations between 1995 and 2002 and as foreign minister between 2004 and 2011. Fighting between Armenian and Azerbaijani forces over the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh continued Monday. Both sides are blaming the other for resuming the attacks that started the day before and have killed at least 30 people. Azerbaijani Defense Ministry claimed that Armenian forces started the shelling in the town of Tatar on Monday morning, while Armenian officials said that the fighting continued throughout the night and Baku resumed offensive actions in the morning. Any move to all-out war could drag in regional powers such as Russia and Turkey. The region has been under the control of ethnic Armenian forces backed by Armenia since 1994 at the end of a separatist war. Sunday, Belarusian police used tear gas and stun grenades to disperse disobedient protesters in the eastern city of Gomel and prevented them from breaking through the rows of police. More than 350 people were detained. It happened as tens of thousands marched for a seventh straight weekend through Minsk and other cities to demand that veteran Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko quit. French President Emmanuel Macron said that he would meet with opposition leader Svetlana Tikhanovskaya if asked. Late on Sunday, a U.S. judge in Washington temporarily blocked a Trump administration order that was set to bar Apple and Alphabet's Google from offering Chinese-owned short video sharing app TikTok for download. Reuters' Libby Hogan has that story.
The Chinese-owned TikTok was to be barred at 11:59 p.m. on Sunday, but U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols, a nominee of President Donald Trump, said in a brief order he was issuing a preliminary injunction to prevent the TikTok app store ban from taking effect. In a 90-minute Sunday morning hearing, a lawyer for TikTok, John E. Hall, argued that the ban was, quote, irrational, as negotiations were still underway. Back in mid-August, Donald Trump gave ByteDance 90 days to sell TikTok, citing security concerns about the safety of data of its 100 million American users and the potential for China to access that data. The latest news comes as parent company ByteDance said it had made a preliminary deal for Walmart and Oracle to take stakes in a newly formed company, TikTok Global, that would oversee the U.S. operations. Negotiations continue over the terms of the agreement and to resolve concerns from Washington and Beijing.
And you've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news. You can do so 24 hours a day by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Belarusian authorities continue to disrupt internet access and restrict online content in response to nationwide protests over fraudulent presidential elections held August 9th. As a result, the United States, along with 35 other nations, issued a statement condemning the ongoing use of partial and complete internet shutdowns by the regime of Alexander Lukashenko. Shutdowns and blocking or filtering of services unjustifiably limit the rights of peaceful assembly and freedoms of association and expression, the statement noted. In conjunction with restrictive measures and intimidation employed against opposition candidates and the mass arrests and detentions of Belarusian peaceful citizens and journalists, actions to limit access to the internet, including social media and other digital communication platforms, further erode civic space. The United States and its allies will continue to stand with the courageous people of Belarus who are making their voices heard in spite of these oppressive measures. It is noteworthy that women are playing a central role in calling for fairness and accountability. Indeed, every Saturday since the fraudulent election, there has been a peaceful women's protest with thousands of women attending, condemning violence and urging Lukashenko to step down. Civic space online is integral to a vibrant civic space offline. Governments should not block or hinder internet connectivity, as shutdowns often undermine human rights and fundamental freedoms, including the rights of peaceful assembly and freedoms of association and expression that form the basis of a democratic society. Internet shutdowns impact all users, especially marginalized groups and those in vulnerable situations. Shutdowns limit media freedom and the ability of journalists and human rights defenders to report on human rights violations or abuses and hold governments accountable. Shutdowns and restrictions also limit the dissemination and free flow of information, harm economic activity, contribute to social and political disorder, and negatively affect public safety. Human rights must be protected online just as they are protected offline. The U.S. and its fellow signatories call on Belarusian authorities to refrain from internet shutdowns and blocking or filtering of services, and to respect Belarus's international human rights obligations. It is incumbent on the government of Belarus to respect civic space, including respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms, democracy, and the rule of law. All human rights violations related to the Belarusian election must be independently investigated and the perpetrators brought to justice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.